Hey super friends, my name is Neil and welcome to this, a very spooky episode 105 of the Get Your Comic Con podcast. We are here fortnightly to bring you a slice of film, TV and pop culture goodness from our studio direct to your listening or viewing device. This episode we are going to be diving into spooky season with some recommendations for things that I think you should be watching and perhaps also reading just in time for Halloween, which is coming up at the end of this weekend. I'm also going to be wrapping up some of the latest news and reminding you about some of our most recent interviews that I think you should be going to check out on YouTube and in other episodes of our podcast. So without further ado, let's dive into the news. First up this week, and almost 70 years after The King of Monsters first towered over cinema screens and established himself as a cultural icon of Japan, Godzilla is back. Anime Limited and Toho Limited have announced that Godzilla Minus One will soon be heading to UK cinemas to cause some serious chaos just in time for Christmas season. Happy holidays indeed. Godzilla Minus One will arrive exclusively in UK cinemas and also Ireland on the 15th of December 2023. And our excitement is absolutely off the charts for this one. So the latest film in Toho's classic series was crafted to be one of the most terrifying incarnations of the character seen on the big screen yet. Returning the franchise to its post-war roots with a Japan gripped by the helplessness of having already lost everything before this new monstrous threat emerges. When despair is piled on top of despair, will the people be able to survive? Never mind fight back. Have to say, I really feel like fighting back against the people who are still doing building work outside my window. Yep. It is still going on, but here we are. So, what more do you need to know about Godzilla Minus One? So, if you want to check out the trailer, you can see it now over on our website. You know the address, but it's www.getyourcomiccon.co.uk. The synopsis for this film is, the worst despair in the series' history strikes Japan. After the war, Japan has been reduced to zero. Godzilla appears and plunges the country into a negative state, the most desperate situation in the history of Japan. Who and how will Japan stand up to it? So as I said, Godzilla Minus One will be released in cinemas in IMAX and 4DX across the UK and Ireland from the 15th of December 2023. Keep it, Geico, for all of the latest news about this one. You know that James is going to be covering it really, really closely as a huge fan of the Godzilla franchise. Now, whilst the writer strike is now over, the actor strike does continue to shut down Hollywood studios. And as kind of was going to be expected at this point, we're starting to see more of the major studios jumble their release slates for 2024. There are obviously plenty of films that are already in the can and ready to go, so we will have some content next year. But until such time as SAG-AFTRA and the AMPTP can come to a conclusion in this strike, we will not be seeing anything else getting filmed for the time being. And so Paramount has now announced that it is shifting some of its slate for 2024. The biggest news out of this is that the eighth film in the Mission Impossible franchise, once again starring Tom Cruise and directed by Christopher McQuarrie, is now going to be shifting from its original release date of, he says, June the 28th, 2024, to a new date of May the 23rd, 2025. So that's an 11-month pushback on this film. Much of it has already been filmed, but they still have more shooting to do, and then there's obviously all of the post-production, potential reshoots, and all of that stuff that needs to get done. So unfortunately, we're not going to be seeing the next part of the story until, as I just said, May the 23rd, 2025. Interestingly, this news also comes with a strange plot twist. You will recall that earlier this year, we saw Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, and the next film was previously announced to be Dead Reckoning Part 2. They have now decided that they're going to drop that title, and we don't know what it's going to be called now, but it is no longer Dead Reckoning Part 2. So I'm kind of confused. I don't know if they will go back and rechristen the previous film and it will just become Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, or if they will just leave it as is and there will be a Part 1 that never has a Part 2. The story is obviously not going to change. It will still follow on directly from where it was. But for some reason, they have decided that they don't want to tie these two films together in title anymore, which is interesting. I would love to know what you think about this news. So please do find me on social media. You can catch me on all major platforms as at Neil Vag. That's N-E-I-L-V-A-G-G. Or you can find us at Get Your Comic Con as well. Are you sad to see the title go? Are you as confused as I am as to why the studio would decide to change the title from kind of this two-part story to being something completely different? In other news from Paramount, they have also moved the release date of A Quiet Place Day One, which is the prequel to the two hit kind of sci-fi horror films from John Krasinski. That was originally set to release on March the 8th, 2024. That film, I believe, has already pretty much finished production. So is shifting back to June the 28th, presumably maybe some delay in terms of the post-production and just trying to space out what films they've got for next year. There was an untitled animated SpongeBob SquarePants movie, which was postponed from May the 23rd, 2025, all the way to December the 19th, 2025. And that's presumably because they haven't got any of the dialogue done yet, and therefore the whole film still needs to be produced. Not all bad news. Another John Krasinski film, If, which is a fantasy comedy which stars Ryan Reynolds alongside Krasinski, Alan Kim, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, has moved up. So that one has moved from May the 24th, 2024 to May the 17th, 2024. So it's shifted by just a few days. What do you think of all of that? Are you expecting more? How are you feeling about things right now with where the strike is? Are you still kind of anxiously awaiting news, or are you now just kind of in a holding pattern waiting to see how that impacts on 2024? I'm really interested to know what people are thinking about it at this point, so do reach out and let me know. And finally, some really exciting news from Prime Video. If, like me, you have really been enjoying Gen V, which is rolling out weekly and has just a couple of episodes left to go in season one, then I'm very excited to tell you that Prime Video has renewed the series for a second season. The final episode of season one will stream on Friday, November the 3rd, 2023, and then we will go into a holding pattern whilst we wait for season four of The Boys, which the two kind of hand off from one to the other. And then at some point in the near future, once again the actor strike is over, we will get a second season of Gen V. So the team from Prime put out a statement just a couple of days ago and said, expanding the universe of The Boys with a series as bold as Gen V has been an incredible journey for us and our wonderful partners at Sony. From our first conversation with showrunners Michelle Fazekas and Tara Butters, along with Eric Kripke, Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, we knew Gen V would push the boundaries. Their unapologetic approach is exactly what audiences love, and it has helped Gen V to become the number one Prime Video series in over 130 countries. That's a statement from Vernon Sanders, who's head of television at Amazon MGM Studios. Gen V is Prime Video's most acquisitive new original series of 2023, and we're excited that our incredible cast and crew are going to continue telling brave and bold stories from Gen V to our customers. There's also some more statements from various people who work on the show. So again, if you want to head over to our website, www.getyourcomiccon.co.uk, you can read the full statement, and you can also read my review of the episodes that I saw ahead of release and everything that we have on Gen V so far. Very excited. Really excited to see how exactly it hands off into The Boys Season 4, whether any Gen V characters may show up there. It's going to be cool to see how this universe exists moving forwards, but I'm really excited. What did you think of Gen V, or what are you thinking of it so far? Have you really enjoyed it? Have you maybe not connected with it? It is slightly different to The Boys, as I've kind of talked about before. So interested to know your thoughts. So once again, please do reach out and let me know, because I'd be really interested to interact with anybody who has some thoughts and wants to talk about this series. And that is it for the news this week. So as always, all that is left for me to say now is, if you want to keep up to date with the latest news, please do check out our website. And if you want to keep the latest breaking stories as close to you as possible, then follow us on all social media platforms. And I will now hand over to myself for some Halloween-y reviews. So this podcast, just because it is Halloween coming up very, very soon, next Monday is October the 31st, I thought it was about time that I did my, I guess it's kind of becoming annual now, selection of things that I think you should be watching, reading, etc. for Halloween this year. And I want to start off by reviewing a film which I got to see a couple of weeks ago as I'm recording this. You may have seen many, many posts on social media about it because I was very excited. So you all know me by now. You know that I am a horror fan. You know that I love a good horror movie. And I feel like you can't beat a good British horror, probably because I am British myself. But if you are thinking about British horror, then who else are you even thinking of as the gold standard or the pinnacle if you are not thinking of Hammer Horror? Hammer is an absolutely brilliant British homegrown company who, thanks to the likes of amazing legendary actors like Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, was absolutely at the forefront of horror in the kind of the 50s, and has been a staple of horror for every decade since, although has been putting out less content more recently, which is something which I am very excited to say is going to be changing in the near future. I, out of kind of curiosity, googled to see what was kind of the biggest one, other than the very obvious kind of Dracula, Christopher Lee release, as to kind of what the internet thought was some of the biggest Hammer horror films, and I came across a list from Entertainment Weekly. This was published in it was updated on the 16th of October 2023. So their list was The Resident from 2011, which stars Hilary Swank and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. You've got The Lady Vanishes from 1979. The one that kind of kicked it all off, which was The Quatermass Experiment from 1955. The Satanic Rites of Dracula from 1973. You've got Curse of Frankenstein from 57. The Mummy in 1959. One of my all-time favorites. Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires from 74. Let Me In from 2010, of course, which I feel like I knew was a Hammer, but for some reason they'd kind of sort of forgotten. The Snorkel from 1958, 1961's Taste of Fear, Maniac from 63, The Old Dark House, also 63, 2020's The Lodge, which I don't think I've seen. It stars Alicia Silverstone, Riley Keough, Jaden Martell, and Liam McHugh. Straight On Till Morning from 1972, that one has Rita Tushingham in it, Shane Bryant. You've got Horror Express from 1972, Hands of the Ripper from 71, Phantom of the Opera 1962, The Abominable Snowman of the Himalayas from 57, The Horror of Dracula from 1958, and then also The Devil Rides Out from 1968. So that was the list from Entertainment Weekly of the best. But suffice to say, Hammer has recently had a bit of a resurgence, so you can read all about this over on our website, but essentially Hammer has been bought in the last few months by John Gore, who is a legend of stage in both the West End and Broadway. So Hammer Films is now Hammer Films, a John Gore company, and the first film in their kind of return from the grave, as it were, is a brand new version of Dr. Jekyll, which is hitting UK cinemas on October the 27th. It's directed by Joe Stevenson, it's written by Dan Kelly Mulhern, and it stars Eddie Izzard as Dr. Nina Jekyll, Scott Chambers as Rob, Lindsay Duncan is in this film, Robin Cara, Jonathan Hyde, ironic, Morgan Watkins, Simon Callow, Tony Jayawardena, and Isabella Inchbold as Nina's mother. I hope I haven't just given too much away. Feel like I may have just given too much away. That's the cast list from IMDb. And so, I mean, if you already know the story of Jekyll and Hyde, then you probably already have an idea as to what will happen. So it's obviously based on Louis Stevenson's 1886 novella, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But this is a very contemporary version, which puts Nina Jekyll, played by Eddie Izzard, in the lead role. Nina is, or has formerly been, the head of this huge pharmaceutical company. She is a former doctor who has recently been injured and is now kind of holed up in her wonderful countryside mansion, which is obviously ever so spooky, and needs help around the house. So she has Lindsay Duncan, who is kind of her administrative manager, who runs the business and all of her affairs, but she needs someone to help her around the house. And so they are looking for someone, and they find Rob, who is played absolutely brilliantly by Scott Chambers, who is someone who is, shall we say, down on his luck and is in need of some work to help dig him out of the trouble that he's been in previously. And so he ends up taking the job as this kind of assistant to Nina Jekyll, and, well, chaos ensues from there. This is another one where I really don't want to spoil it, because obviously the film is not out yet as I'm recording this. I really want people to go out and see it. I cannot say enough how much I want people to go out and to see this film, just because not only should you champion British horror, but we should be championing Hammer, and we need to be championing this kind of... Okay, original is not the right word, because it is obviously based on Louis Stevenson's original, but this perfectly contemporized, not carbon copy of things that we've seen before. It is wonderfully inclusive without clubbing you over the head with it. It is kind of, how do I want to say it? It is the perfect example of a low budget but perfectly made British horror movie. You know, we see so many of these big Hollywood blockbusters. I mean, I just went to see Five Nights at Freddy's a couple of days ago, and I have to remind you all to check out James's interview with Emma Tammy, the director of Five Nights at Freddy's, in his special FNAF, as I have learned to call it, podcast, which is available now, or you can check out the interview over on YouTube. But when you look at a film like Five Nights at Freddy's, there's so much budget that is ploughed into the animatronics and set pieces and all of this stuff that you see in a big Hollywood movie. You think about Megan. You had, you know, again, it's maybe not one with a huge number of visual effects, but you had all of this kind of huge stunt work. And you think about big, flashy Hollywood kind of horror. And by massive contrast, Dr. Jekyll is this wonderfully kind of sublime, subtle, character-driven, tense, really classic British horror. And I love that, and we need more of it. And that is what I hope John Gore will bring to Hammer. So, that being said, I do want to talk about the story. I don't want to spoil it, so I'm going to try and choose my words very carefully. Eddie and Scott, I should say Susie Izzard, under the name of Eddie Izzard in this film, and Scott are a wonderful pairing. Scott as Rob is this really wonderfully innocent and somewhat naive character who has had problems in the past and really does genuinely want to just get back up on his feet and to do right by his family. And that is something which is made really, really clear very early in the film. And again, something which is different to what you would see in some of the big kind of Hollywood studio horror films is a dedication to character development. So Rob is a really well-rounded character. And, you know, Maeve, played by Robin Cara, is a kind of prior love interest of his. You have Morgan Watkins as Ewan, who is his brother. We know who the important people are in his life. We know the reasons why he's doing what he's doing. So when he goes to Nina Jekyll's, you know, to Nina's mansion and desperately tries to take up this job, we know why, and we empathize with him, and we want for him to succeed, to be able to get back up on his feet and to be the man that he wants to be, knowing full well at the same time that there is clearly a twist coming in the story. And so we follow him through this journey. We don't meet Nina for a little while, and when we do, she's this very enigmatic character locked up in this house who has kind of got a lot going on of her own. We get a brief history of her through some news clippings. We understand that there's maybe some controversy there, and you already know purely from the title and obviously from her name that there is going to be more going on than meets the eye. And so it just becomes an interesting kind of cat and mouse game of what will happen, when will it happen, and how will it play out. And everything that happens is really well executed. There's no rush, there's no immediacy to anything, but at the same time, it's not too slow. It's really well paced. It's exquisitely well paced and really well acted by Eddie and Scott and Lindsay and everyone else who is in it. But really, you know, so much of it hangs on Nina and Rob and the partnership between the two of them, that the chemistry that the two actors have is great, and it plays out very well on screen. And you get exactly what you want from it. You get to see these two beginning to bond, and then you get to see the confusion of Rob not understanding some of Nina's behaviour. And the film really cleverly doesn't, whilst you have an idea as to what's going on if you are familiar with the original text, it doesn't reveal everything up front. So if you are going into it with enough of a fresh mind that you think, well, I know the original story, but I don't know what they're doing with it here, then you don't necessarily know or are able to predict exactly what will happen and when. And so there are moments when you don't necessarily know if you are talking to Jekyll or if you are talking to who you will eventually become known as Rachel Hyde. And so that is very interesting, trying to understand which side of the character is which one and what their motivations are. And that is actually something completely unpredictable that I did not get. And in the end of the film, it was a gut punch, because they do such a wonderful third act twist that I never saw coming. And I realize I've now spoiled that there's some sort of twist coming, but I'm not going to tell you what it is or how it plays out. But certainly for the ending of the film, I was left feeling like I both want to see more of Rob and Nina and Rachel, but also gutted by some of the decisions that some of them had made. And I don't say that as a negative to the filmmaking. I mean that as in, my God, did this story just work so well? It worked incredibly well. I loved these characters, and it got me. I completely had feelings for everyone that was involved and was not necessarily happy with their outcomes. And that, to me, is the sign of a great film. And not only a great film, but a great horror film that's able to do that. Because, again, if you go and watch a Scream film, yeah, you'll have feelings for Neve Campbell or Courtney Cox because we've spent decades with them from the first film onwards. But you get all those other throwaway characters that get picked off throughout these films that you just, you know the tiniest shred about their personality to make them have a unique voice, but you really don't care about anything other than seeing them get killed off. And here, you will care for people, you will care for their downfalls, or, you know, you will care for their outcomes, and that is testament to a very, very strong film. Production-wise, so this film was shot for, I believe, around £1 million, and firstly, it looks amazing. Secondly, they do not use visual effects for the sake of it. There are some very small moments. There is a cigarette that Nina smokes, which has a green hue to it, which may have been a practical kind of coloured powder effect, or may have been something done in post. I don't know. I don't care. Whatever it was done well. It didn't look weird on screen. You know, there is no unnecessary CGI. There is great practical makeup effects. A lot of it very, very small, just cuts, bruises, you know, the really, really simple stuff. But that is very provocative on screen when you see it, because it looks so tangible and so real. And then there are some moments that kind of do nod back to earlier versions of Jekyll and Hyde, which also look absolutely outstanding on film. And the other great thing about this is, it is a horror film. It is a Hammer horror film. But it is not a film which is just literally trying to scare for the sake of scaring. Anything in the film which is tense or which is scary is for the sake of it. It's placed well in the story. It has context. It has meaning. And it is executed very, very well. And so really, I absolutely cannot fault it whatsoever. And so I think I'm going to stop talking about it there before I start spoiling things. Is there anything else I want to say about it other than please, please, I just implore you to go watch this. If you are looking for a film that you want to see for Halloween, which is not just your box standard slasher, you want something that is elevated, that's intelligent, that's really well executed, well acted, well shot, then please, please, please go see Joe Stevenson's Dr. Jekyll, produced by Hammer Horror, at Hammer Films, a John Gore company, and in UK cinemas from October the 27th, 2023. I nearly said 2025. I just lost 2 years. Please, it's my number one recommendation for Halloween 2023. So please do go check it out. So what else do I want to recommend you for watching this year for Halloween? Right, I've got the classics, obviously. No Halloween would be complete without watching Scooby-Doo. My go-to, and I'm sure I've talked about this in previous years, is The 12 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. It's a short series which also co-starred the wonderful voice talent of Vincent Price. Scooby and Shaggy have accidentally opened some kind of Pandora's box and released all of these real ghosts out into the world, and they have to go out and capture them and bring them back. It stars Vincent Price. It doesn't have any Velma or Fred, which is kind of a shame, but it does still have Daphne. And it is a massive favourite of mine from when I was a kid, and you can pick it up now on digital. It's available on iTunes and other digital platforms. And that is one of my family-friendly recommendations, alongside even more Scooby-Doo, actually. Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island is a film that I watch every Halloween. It's an animated movie from, I want to say, the late 90s, kind of in 2000. Again, features a little more of a sort of genuine supernatural story than the kind of pull-off-the-mask I would have gotten away for it if it wasn't for those meddling kids type story. But it is heavily thought of by many as one of, if not the best Scooby-Doo movie of all time. I'm going to have to Google it, aren't I, while I'm talking about it. Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, 1998. It's a 1998 film. It's kind of, it follows some similar plot points to the first live action in that Mystery Inc. has gone their own separate ways beforehand. And the beginning of the film drags them back together. So if I read the kind of beginning of this plot synopsis, Mystery Inc. has gone their separate ways after becoming bored of mystery solving due to their monstrous culprits always being people in costumes. Daphne Blake, along with Fred Jones, starts running a successful television series determined to hunt down a real ghost rather than a fake one. Sometime later, Fred contacts Velma, Shaggy, and his dog Scooby to reunite for Daphne's birthday. They embark on a road trip, scouting haunted locations across the US for Daphne's show, only to encounter yet more fake monsters. Arriving in New Orleans, Louisiana, they are invited to visit Moonscar Island, an island allegedly haunted by the ghost of its pirate namesake, Morgan Moonscar. Though they are skeptical, they agree, and I'm going to stop there because chaos ensues. So it was released in September of 1998. It scars? It stars Adrian Barbeau, Mary Kay Bergman, Jim Cummings, Scott Innes, Mark Hamill, BJ Ward, Frank Welker, and Billy West. Brilliant film. Again, it's available on digital platforms. So if you're looking for something a bit more family friendly, something animated, then please do go check out Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island. Or if you want to stick to live action, then yes, I do also recommend Scooby-Doo, and to a slightly lesser extent, Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Incorporated? Monsters Unleashed? Monsters Unleashed, right? But my other recommendations for this year, if you're looking to pick up something new, then obviously everyone knows that I am absolutely a fan of Shudder, and they have many films that are out this month that you should be checking out. I talked about VHS 1985 already. I want to pick up on a couple of others that I have watched recently. So I just watched a film called The Puppet Man, and that one is about a girl who, as a child, was locked in a cupboard by her wicked parents and is only set free when her father brutally murders her mother and she's discovered by the police. But not all is as it seems, and living as a kind of must be 18, 19 year old at Buffalo State University, she and her friends decide that they're going to stay behind for the holidays and party in the abandoned dorms, only to discover that the kind of villainous lurking puppet man in the title may still indeed exist, and that there may be a twist or two in the tale. It's kind of a... I would chalk this one up to a fun kind of, you've got the friends round, you're going to grab a pizza, grab a beer, and just sit and have something horror on whilst you're kind of socialising with friends, because it's not a deep watch, but it's a fun one. There are twists that may or may not be predictable, but that you can kind of enjoy with friends trying to work out what's happening and who may really be who and what will happen next. And again, it's a low budget, works within its special effects budget, has some unpredictable moments whilst also having some which are a little bit more predictable, but there is a lot of fun to be had with it. So I think The Puppet Man should definitely be on your list for 2023 Halloween. Likewise, one that's going to require a bit more of your attention is Night of the Hunted, also streaming now on Shudder. This one is about a pharmaceutical marketing rep who has a very complicated romantic life, ends up at a gas station at 2 o'clock in the morning when she needs to fill her car up, when a sniper starts picking people off around her. It turns out that maybe there is a little bit more to what's going on than simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that's what makes this film really interesting. This is one that if you're going to watch it, you're going to want to sit down and really give it your full attention, because it poses a lot of questions about morality. So on the face of it, it seems that this poor character has just been in the wrong place at the wrong time and has been caught up in this scenario with this absolute lunatic shooter who is picking people off and has her trapped, like he's toying with her in a cat and mouse way. But it would transpire that maybe he has some motivations that are a little bit more political. Here comes a cat. And at the same time, you want to wave to the people on YouTube? Hello. At the same time, maybe she isn't as innocent as it seems, but not through maybe, as the way I've kind of said it so far, predictable means. And so the two continue to be locked into this kind of cat and mouse game, but in a very different and interesting way, which the payoff, I'm a little bit on the fence as to whether the film lands perfectly, but it's certainly a very engaging watch, which from the second things kind of really kick off, it grabbed me and did not let me go until the end. It was that sort of film whereby I had a feeling where it would end up, but at the same time, as it really starts to heat up and it really gets going, I was kind of holding my breath and I didn't really exhale until the end of the film, because it was kind of a, what's going to happen? And it's very interesting just in terms of seeing how morally these two characters play off against each other. So that's Night of the Hunted, which is also available now on Shudder. I've got another couple which I don't think I can fully talk about yet. There is a film called Hell House. I need to get this title right. Hell House LLC Carmichael Manor, which is also coming very, very soon to Shudder. That is the fourth film in the Hell House LLC franchise. That's an interesting one. That is a found footage horror. Again, I do recommend it. It's another one that I think... this is the kind of one where, if you're with friends celebrating Halloween, you maybe want to give it some more attention than you would, say, Puppet Man, but it's a good one to sit down with the lights off and watch, hold onto a pillow for those kind of jump scares. But it's going to be another good one that should be on your watch list this year. Five Nights at Freddy's, which James has already talked about at length, definitely one that you want to watch this year. So please, again, do go check out his interview with Emma Tammy and put that on your watch list. I have just seen Saw X, which has been confirmed to come to digital platforms in the UK on... possibly on Halloween? Was it the 30th? It's out in time for Halloween on digital platforms in the UK either way. So if you missed this one at the cinema, do check it out. I've just kind of added it to my ranking of the Saw franchise and surprised myself, it's landed in third place. So Saw X, if you haven't seen it, brings back John Kramer, the famous Jigsaw from all of the previous films, who was last seen in the film before Spiral. Must be Saw 3D? Jigsaw? Oh, I've forgotten the order that they go in. He wasn't in Spiral, which came out during the pandemic anyway. But John Kramer is back, as is Amanda, his little sidekick. And this is a film which is set between the first Saw and Saw 2. And it's a brand new story about what happens kind of around John Kramer's diagnosis with cancer and how he reacts to that. And how much do I want to say? How much do I want to say, and how much is in the synopsis? Ooh, there's a Saw official website. They'll have a good synopsis. This is not retribution. It's a reawakening. Witness Jigsaw's return. The film... Oh, here we go. Official synopsis. John Kramer, played by Tobin Bell, is back. The most chilling installment of the Saw franchise yet explores the untold chapter of Jigsaw's most personal game. Set between the events of Saw 1 and 2, a sick and desperate John travels to Mexico for a risky and experimental medical procedure in the hopes of a miracle cure for his cancer, only to discover the entire operation is a scam to defraud the most vulnerable. Armed with a newfound purpose, John returns to his work, turning the tables on the con artists in his signature, visceral way through a series of ingenious and terrifying traps. So it's directed by Kevin Grutert, written by Peter Goldfinger and Josh Stolberg, produced by Mark Berg and Oren Cools, and stars Tobin Bell, Shawnee Smith, Synnøve McCody-Lund, Stephen Brand, Michael Beach, and Renate Vasser. It's really surprised me. I wasn't sure that the idea of bringing back Tobin Bell and Shawnee Smith was going to be a good idea, but my God, did they prove me wrong? Again, I gave a running commentary to Matt, who you will know from various reviews on the website, as I was watching it, and there were things that I thought was happening, there were things that I criticised as I was watching it, particularly some of the very early medical stuff while they're setting up what's going on, because it's a very slow first act, which really focuses on Kramer and his cancer, and how he's feeling, and how he kind of perceives the world, and how desperate he is to find a treatment. So there were things that I really nitpicked while I was watching that, and then... You kind of follow him on this journey, you follow him to Mexico, you follow him through some kind of far-fetched moments that bring him to this supposed medical clinic where he has this surgery, and then you get the revelation that it wasn't real, that they've just stolen his money, and the Jigsaw side of him kicks in, and obviously that's when the traps start. And then I realised that once again I was hooked by it, and that actually it was really interesting, and it was quite different, because... Jigsaw is almost not really a thing. This is John... It says in the synopsis that this is his most personal game yet. And John Kramer is really the protagonist of this film, which is kind of a first for the franchise. And also very exciting to see. They have genuinely done something different. And yes, the traps are all... You know, they're new variants of things we've seen before. You know, people having heads cut off, people being burnt, people, you know, being gassed. All of that stuff. It's when, you know, when the action really starts, it's the classic Saw... tropes, but the framing of it is actually very original, and so well done to them for being able to do that and do that well. So I'm really excited by having seen it, and I want to watch it again, because I think there's some good rewatch value to it. Whilst you unpick some of the clues, you know, like similar other films there in this franchise, I'm not going to spoil anything here, because you know, for those who haven't seen it, this should also be very high on your watch list for Halloween. But there are twists and things that I did not see coming, which genuinely surprised me. And there were ways that I thought things were going that they didn't. So, well done, Lionsgate. Well done. I'm sorry that I missed it in the cinema, because it was very much worth watching, and I kind of wish I'd seen it on the big screen. It's scope and scale, some of it is a little bit, early moments I felt looked very much like a streaming film, but then when you get down to the Saw action, it you know, that's where all of the kind of, what's the spectacle, I guess, gruesome spectacle kicks in and makes it really, really worth watching. So I'm interested to know what people thought about it, actually, because I think it's probably a bigger success than I thought it was. And I'm now interested to know what they might do next with the franchise, because there's this new side to John that's a bit more brutal and a bit more personal that would be interesting to see more of if they could find more story to tell. But that then begs the question of, do we really want to see more of him? I guess part of it does come from the fact that we kind of go into this film knowing that he's desperately searching for this cure, but we know at the same time what ultimately happens to him, because we've gone back in time and we've seen his ultimate fate later on in previous films. Figure that one out. Timey-wimey. But yeah, Saw X, genuine surprise. So please do, if you've not seen it, put that one on your watch list, because I think it's well worth a watch. And I think that might be my list for this year. Don't forget that The Exorcist Believer is also still available in cinemas at the moment. You can listen to our previous episode if you would like to hear my thoughts on that film. What is on your watch list for Halloween this year? Let me know what are your staples. Oh, I have a TV recommendation as well. Actually, I do want to talk about a comic book, which is Halloween-y, in just a second. But I do have a TV recommendation. I would also like you to go back and check out, if you've watched it before and haven't rewatched, or if you never saw this first time around, go and check out 2000's Dracula. The version that came from Stephen Moffat, Doctor Who fame, Mark Gatiss, also Doctor Who fame. It was a 3-episode series that starred Klaus Bang, Dolly Wells, and Morford Clark. And you have these three really, really different sort of takes on Dracula. In the first one is very, very classic Transylvanian based. The second one is a story on the Demeter, which actually, now having seen The Last Voyage of the Demeter, I feel like that film was heavily influenced by this episode. And then a third, slightly less successful episode that's set in what is the kind of present day, that puts Dracula as a fish out of water in this world of iPhones and flat screen TVs. But if you never saw it, then I think we may have talked about it on a podcast, probably Halloween 2020. If you haven't watched it, please do go check it out, because it's something a little different. It's obviously short form. They're episodes that run to sort of 60-70 minutes, but it's a good little, bite-size for Dracula, kind of Halloween chunk that you can go watch. So please do add that one to your watch list. TV, that got me thinking about TV now. Creepshow, you should obviously all be watching Creepshow, and hopefully the Daryl Dixon Walking Dead show, which I hear is also quite scary at times because of its slightly more powerful walkers, will come to the UK very, very soon. But you can also watch that one if you're in the US. So that's a special one for my US viewers and listeners out there, if you haven't already watched it and would like some zombie horror. But I do also want to talk about a comic book, and I'm going to have to grab my iPad for this one so that I can get all of the credits. But I want to talk about a very unexpected Halloween series, because I can't not have comic books in this podcast now that we have done such a good job of bringing it back over the last few weeks. But there is a series that you are definitely not expecting for Halloween that you should be reading, and I am going to hold up the cover of issue 1 for those who are watching this podcast on YouTube, just because you're not going to want to believe me when I say it. But I think if you all want some fun Halloween reading, then you should be reading IDW's 4-part series, Star Trek Halloween. Yep, I said it. Star Trek Halloween. Star Trek has never really been one that's done horror or Halloween before. Not outright, anyway. But they've just run this 4-part over 4 weeks series called Star Trek Halloween. It's written by Chris Sequeira, with art by Joe Eisma, colours by Charlie Kirchhoff, and letters by Clayton Cowles. And it is, I've reviewed the first couple of issues, I need to review issues 3 and 4 on the website, but essentially it's a series in which the holodeck, obviously, Halloween, becomes infected with, I'm not going to spoil it, becomes infected with a character who you have seen in the past in Star Trek the original series, and manifests this really genius horror storyline. And what Chris Sequeira has done is use Star Trek logic and Star Trek science, and most importantly technobabble, to be able to tell a horror story. There are some conveniences. So in the first issue, the crew of the Enterprise is all feeling a little down, a little overworked, and Troy, Counselor Troy, played by Marina Sirtis in the TV show, is looking for a way to cheer everyone up, and she realizes that where they are in the world, they in the old world Earth calendar, happens to be Halloween. And so she recommends a Halloween party, but that's kind of secondary to then what happens with this whole holodeck mystifying thing that goes on, which is just hilarious, and it's a brilliant read. And what they've been able to do to make it fun visually is bring in basically the Universal monsters, but in a holodeck-ish kind of way and a fun Star Trek way. And so this isn't a scary story, it's not a gory story, it's just a really silly, fun, classic, I might add, Star Trek holodeck story that takes a Halloween twist, and I can't recommend it enough. And you can actually pick up all four issues now because it has literally rolled out across 4 weeks, so that as we hit Halloween, the full story is available. So that is Star Trek Halloween, available now in comic book stores and on digital platforms from IDW Publishing, and it's my comic book recommendation for all you Halloween kids out there. And that is it for this episode. Things I need to remember to tell you about. I've mentioned James's interview with Emma Tammy a couple of times for Five Nights at Freddy's. Do also check out his interview with voice actor Kelly Hu, who you will know as Lady Deathstrike from X2, and countless other roles in movies, TV series, and computer games, animation, everything. He got to sit down and talk with her about brand new Mortal Kombat movie Cage Match, which is available now from Warner Brothers Animation, so please do go check that out. As always, please do go check out our website for all of the latest and follow us on social media. I have some plans for what's happening in the near future. We have a couple of things that are cooking away in the background, but I don't want to say too much. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, we've got London Comic Con, so we'll try and record some stuff from there. I'm going to be talking to you about these really cool new art sets from Spectrum Noir, which are these kind of fan art professional art kits, so you can color in your favorite superheroes and characters and feel like a professional comic book artist, but they are awesome. I am test driving them as we speak. Film-wise, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. With Halloween season kind of cooling down, we will have to see what's next. Very excited for the return of Doctor Who. I didn't have time to talk about it in the news, but it has literally just been confirmed that it will air every Saturday here in the UK, starting from November the 25th for its three specials, leading us into when Shooty Gatwell will take over and have the brand new season. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Other than that, the world is our oyster, so let's wait and see. Maybe the multiverse is our oyster. We've got the Marvels coming up too. So until then, I'm going to stop talking. Stay safe, stay well, and I will see you out there. Bye.